This is Mental Wealth on 103.2 Dublin City FM with Brian Green.
Good afternoon. If you want to get in touch with the programme, the usual email address, it's mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie. Coming up on today's programme, I'll be talking to two members of Addictive Eaters Anonymous, and a really interesting interview. Do stay around for that. First of all, just some news of an event coming up that closes off Green Ribbon Month quite nicely on Thursday, the 31st of May, in Stephen's Green, Living Library. It's organised by the College of Psychiatrists of Ireland, and it's a living library in St. Stephen's Green, and it's between 12:30 and 2:30. When it comes to mental health, everyone has a story to share, and we find comfort, empathy and compassion in shared experiences. Social contact is known to be one of the most effective ways of reducing mental health related stigma and discrimination. So with this in mind, and to mark Green Ribbon Month, the College is delighted to announce our Living Library event, a library come to life in the outdoors. The aim is to better understand the lived experiences of others who have experienced or facilitated recovery from mental illness and distress, and to challenge their own assumptions, prejudices and stereotypes. We invite you to read the human books through convention and gain understanding of the experience. Yes, the books are people. It's a fascinating idea. It's on 12:30 on Thursday in Stephen's Green, and it's organised by the College of Psychiatrists of Ireland. You don't have to pay in, but you can register, and the event is on Eventbrite if you look up Living Library. Okay, to today's interview, I'm speaking with two members of Addictive Eaters Anonymous, and I begin by asking them, what is Addictive Eaters Anonymous and how does the organisation function?
Hi, Brian. Addictive Eaters Anonymous is a 12-step fellowship. It's modelled after AA, where people who have had a problem with food or addiction to food can find a solution to that problem. I suppose for myself, I had seen a flyer that said, "Is food a problem for you?" And I used to walk by that flyer, and it very much was a problem, because I had found that when I was eating, that I would binge eat, and that I had plans to eat one or two biscuits or one or two sandwiches, and just I'd keep eating. So it was like one or two just wasn't enough. And I also found that I was obsessed about food and obsessed about weight. And if I was eating, how can I manage the weight that I would put on with this food? And I found that I went to great lengths to be secretive about what I was eating, because I didn't want other people to realise that I had a problem or realise that how I ate wasn't normal. So when I saw that flyer, it stuck in my mind, because I had been trying to manage things myself, and I found I couldn't. And out of that, I went to Addictive Eaters Anonymous. So in that, then I met people who had the same experiences or similar experiences to me with regard to food and weight, but they'd found a solution. They didn't have to eat the way I was eating, and they didn't have that obsession in their head about how can I lose the weight, what do I need to do, where's the food going to be coming from, and they were able to get on with their lives in a way that I wasn't. I was stuck. Yeah, that was what I found in the beginning.
Would I be right in thinking that it's more about the thought processes than the food and the weight itself?
Yeah, I guess for me, I was, I ate a lot, you know, like binging for me and purging and obsessing about food and my weight. And that kind of really distracted me to what was underlying that. And I think that's the great thing about Addictive Eaters Anonymous and the 12-step program, is that I get to the root of why I was eating addictively. Okay, I know I'm just an addictive eater, I'm an addict, so that's the reason really why I ate. But underlying that, there's also a lot of fear and resentment and a lot of self-centeredness, you know, and really obsessed about myself and what people thought of me. And then, you know, dishonesty, you know, I'd never really say what was really going on for me. Always had this front up. I wanted people to think a certain way about me. And so I could never really be my true self, you know, and I was always afraid of what people would really think of me if they found out who I really was. So there was always this kind of act on, I guess. And I think over time that started to make me very miserable and uncomfortable and led to more eating. And that real disconnect, I guess. So I guess the great thing about getting through the 12 steps is to realize all these fears and resentments and clear away, you know, all that wreckage and dishonesty, and become free of all that disease thinking and that kind of obsessive mind.
I'm going to get to you going to your first meeting in a moment, but let's just get to the point just before your first meeting. A flyer was mentioned as an indicator of maybe that's for me. What else was in your mind when you're, you know, pre going to your first meeting?
I suppose I got to a point where I really was trying to stop doing what I was doing, and I found I couldn't, and that frightened me. And I remember I used to have a kind of a deal in my head that if I went beyond a certain weight, that would surely make me stop. And I really thought that would make me stop because I'd be so ashamed of being beyond that weight. But I knew I'd gone beyond that weight, and it still didn't stop me eating. And I was just baffled by that. And I was also baffled by how I could understand about calories and understand about exercise and might have been able to tell somebody else what to do in those areas, but I wasn't able to do it myself. I wasn't able to keep my promises to myself. So I just had some sort of sense that whatever this was had me beaten, because I couldn't stop. I could not stop picking up that first one. And I suppose I got to a place where I was hopeless around it. I just felt that if I had lived to be 70, I'd still be doing the same things and it'd probably just be worse. Whereas before that, I used to kind of feel I was in a bit of a rush and I'd dust myself down and I'd try again and I'd go on another diet or I'd have some other scheme to manage the effect of the food, which was the weight. And I just couldn't do it anymore. And the weight was going on. So in a way, vanity got me in, but just that sense of being beaten. Something here has me beaten. I cannot manage this myself.
There's kind of two things going on. There's the weight, and then there's your own unhappiness with yourself about not being able to be true to yourself and be honest and get to those numbers and do what you said you would do.
I was frustrated. I was upset, and I'd find, you know, I'd find myself sitting on the bedroom floor wondering how the hell I'd got myself into this mess again, and why couldn't I manage it? And I suppose, in the end, I was hoping that one day I'd just wake up and it'd be okay. But that wasn't my experience before being in recovery. It just wasn't okay. There might be days where I thought I was doing okay. And for me, that'd be if I could stick to what other people would regard as healthy food. If I could stick to the fruit and the veg and that type of food, I think I was doing okay. But even around that, I was still obsessive. I could have a bag of apples in the car and I'd work my way through that bag. And I'd be saying to myself, well, it's not chocolate, but I was still obsessive and compulsive about it. Or I'd make a pot of soup and I'd say, I'm just going to have a bowl of that. And sure, I'd work my way through the pot. And so even around regular healthy food, I was still addictive and I was still obsessive about it. And I always ended up in the chocolate and the biscuits anyway, sooner or later.
So you progress to the point where you're going to go to your first meeting. And tell us about what that's like and meeting other people who are in the same predicament as you.
I found it such a relief getting to a meeting and hearing other members there sharing about what they were doing with food or what they had done with food and were no longer in that mental obsession, or they were no longer binging. They seemed to be free from it. And that just, you know, brought me a lot of hope, and I found it really attractive, and it just kept me coming back. And, you know, for so many years, I felt so alone that I thought nobody else ate like me. I was very much a secret eater, you know, I'd binging and purging on my own, and I could eat kind of normally around people, but had, you know, very much double life. And yeah, and then just to, yeah, hear other people doing the same thing or having the same thoughts and behaviours around food. Yeah, it's such a relief to no longer be alone and to know that there's a solution. And yeah, and that I didn't have to eat like that anymore, that there is help. And yeah.
And I'm jumping forward and back here a bit, but before you go to your first meeting and in the years beforehand, you've tried various other things that didn't work. What is it that works about Addictive Eaters Anonymous and their meetings and the way that they help you?
I think I got an understanding of this disease of addiction as I would see it. I heard people talking about this mental obsession about food and weight, about the physical allergy, which was that when I'd pick up the first one, I'd just have to have the next one sooner or later, and the next one and the next one. And I heard about a spiritual malady, that I am restless, irritable and discontent, and that the food was the drug for that. It treated that. But in treating that, it kind of came back to bite me. You know, it became bigger and bigger in my head. This obsession grew larger and larger. And that physical allergy, that while I could see, say, a family member have one or two biscuits after dinner and be genuinely satisfied, I just wasn't satisfied with that. And it was like no amount of food could fill that restlessness and irritability, and it helped in that it blunted it, but it just wasn't enough. And so for me, it was a great help to hear that explanation of the disease of addiction. And the recovery program is a program based on the 12 steps of AA, and I would see it as a spiritual program that we, you know, first of all, admit we are powerless over food and that my life is unmanageable by me. And then we go on to get a higher power, as we understand a higher power. And that's different for every individual. We get to look back at the past and see how we behaved and how we could have maybe done things differently. And we ask that higher power for help with that. And we go on to make amends to people for the hurts we've done. And then we try and live a certain way of life, you know, try and be honest, try and carry this message to newcomers, to share this program of recovery with other people. And a day at a time, I just found that obsession to have to eat more than I was meant to eat was taken away when I did these things. So that today, the food isn't calling to me the way it used to call to me. It's not calling to me at all. Whereas before, if I had a packet of biscuits in the press, it was like I couldn't rest until I had them. And it's not like that today. So
I'm totally new to this, and I'm thinking how this is different to Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous, in that they go for total abstinence, but you've can't go more than 44 days without eating, because you'll die. You need to actually have a relationship change with food and continue to eat. So that is the significant difference I can see. Am I right?
Yeah, I guess that's, we can't really abstain from eating. So we don't really say absence, we say sobriety in AEA. And I guess, you know, for around the food, it was just to, for me to admit that I am not normal around food, that I don't really know how to feed myself rightly. You know, so given from my past experience, I would just, you know, overeat and binge and everything. So from coming to AA, you know, I get a sponsor and follow their direction with the food about, you know, when to eat, how much to eat, and, you know, what to eat. And I just kind of feel that this takes all the decisions away from me, and just to follow guidance from that. And that really helps today. I don't have that obsession anymore, and I don't overeat or undereat. You know, I feel like I eat just what's right for my body. And yeah, I no longer obsess about my weight either. So yeah, it works.
So it works with the sponsors. You've had sponsors, but then you stay in the group and you become a sponsor yourself. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I suppose for me, a sponsor is somebody who has been down this road before me. And like has been said, my sponsor would have helped me with regard to giving me directions about how much to eat and when to eat, and also just shared her experience of what it's like to live without having to eat addictively. What's it like to go to work and come home from work without having to stop off the shop on the way home because I might feel a bit anxious? What's it like to go to a family function without having to eat before I go there, eat addictively when I'm there, eat when I get home? So she would share her experience of how we go about that, like about maybe you might think of other people instead of thinking about myself. And with regard to being a sponsor, yes, I'm willing that if a member asked me to be their sponsor, we'd have a chat about that and just see, is that something that would be a good idea? So we don't have to be sponsors, but sometimes the opportunity comes up, and when it does, it can be very powerful, because I in turn then get to share my experience of this is what it was like. And if I can help somebody else in that way, great. But sometimes there's other ways we can help people instead without being a sponsor. There's many members in my life who aren't my sponsor, but have shared their recovery with me. And that's just been powerful for me, just to hear other people share what it's like to live without having to be in the thick of the food.
I'm thinking of how this parallels to the other organisations, and I'm thinking that there wouldn't be much effect on family from the way you were before you went to meetings. Am I getting that wrong?
I suppose it, for me, if I was eating in the kitchen and, you know, I might have had my lunch, but I was now eating other stuff after my lunch. And if a family member came in, I would kind of, you know, try to hide the food under the paper, or I would be awkward because they were disturbing my eating as I saw it. And because I was so secretive about the food, I'd be very awkward around them. I'd be only waiting for them to leave. So that awkwardness was not wanting other people to realise what I was doing, but also I just want to eat the food and that's more important. So that other person mightn't have realised what was going on or why I was awkward with them, but it was because I was in addiction that I was awkward with them. And I also remember, you know, there was a time I was in a job, and during that job I'd go off to the gym in the middle of the job. Now, the job mightn't have realised that this was all got to do with addiction and obsession about weight and food, but I know today that that job was affected because of the disease of addiction that I had. And also there would be things like, you know, if I was invited somewhere, you know, I'd be so obsessed about how do I look? What have I got to talk about? What do people think of me? That I just wasn't necessarily relaxed and giving in those situations. And today I see that as the disease of addiction, that restlessness and irritability and self-centeredness that means that I'm not necessarily, or wasn't necessarily, present to people. I was just more interested in the food because that knocked the edge off things.
The overindulgence with food, do you replace that with something else, or do you just learn to control it through guidance from your sponsor and sticking to a regime?
Yeah, for me, it doesn't feel today like I'm trying to control the food in the way I used to in the past. I used to really try and control the food and only eat certain foods or only eat a certain amount. And it doesn't feel like that today. I suppose what I try to do today is focus on recovery. And for me, that might be going to meetings, ringing my sponsor, talking to other members, doing a bit of prayer and meditation, seeing what I can do to help somebody else, be it in recovery or at work or in my family or with my friends. And I just find that when I shift my focus to other people and stuff outside of me And with doing those 12 steps, that obsession to eat more than I'm supposed to or eat less than I'm supposed to was taken away. So it doesn't feel today like it's a control thing. It feels like I have a freedom to get about my daily life. Yeah, sure, eat my meals, but I don't have to eat more or eat less. And when I do these things, I'm lighter in myself, and I get to enjoy life, and I get to enjoy the people in my life. And while I mightn't, today I don't go eating the chocolate cake and the biscuits, I don't miss them. And that's an absolute gift of this program.
Is there a social side to the group? My first job, I worked in a cafe, and the AA were my biggest rush of the week because they'd all come in en masse after their meeting and want 32 coffees. is there a good social dimension to it?
Not really. Like, we have our weekly meeting, and we spend some time together there, but...
Is there a camaraderie between the fellow members?
Yeah, definitely. Maybe a couple of weekends ago, there was a workshop on in Glasgow. So there was about four of us from Dublin went over for that together for an AA workshop. So that was really nice to spend some time with members there. And, we got to go to some galleries and spend some time there. But
I don't see it as a sort of a social club. I see it as a fellowship. And that really my primary purpose of being at a meeting is if there's somebody there, a newcomer that doesn't know about this fellowship, can I just share a little bit of my story with them so that they might, if they wish, decide that that's something that might work for them. And so that's my real purpose with being at meetings. And but there is a fellowship in that we're in touch with each other, as much or as little as we want. But it's, it's a recovery fellowship, and it's not about necessarily meeting each other outside of that.
It's open to men and women alike?
Yeah, the disease doesn't discriminate between men and women, so it's open to everyone in all different socio and economic backgrounds. And
is there kind of an over 18s and then a younger version of the group?
Well, it would be mainly for adults, but maybe it's open for children too. We haven't had any teenagers. Yeah, so I know my problem with food started when I was a teenager, but I think it took a good 10 years before I was ready to ask for help. So predominantly our members are adults, but male and female, and of all different adult ages.
Do many people know about your organisation? Do you seem to fly underneath the radar? And you're on the radio now, so some people are going to hear about you, but is it a growing thing?
Yeah, it's, I suppose this fellowship started in New Zealand, in Christchurch in New Zealand, and they would have a number of meetings there. And now we have a meeting in Dublin, and there are meetings in Scotland and the UK and the States. So it's not a very big fellowship, but it is growing. And there are members internationally who have years of sobriety, 20, 30 years of sobriety. But likewise, there are members who are around a couple of months or a couple of years. So yeah, compared to AA, it's a small fellowship.
Before I get to your contact details and close the interview, if there's anybody listening to the radio now and they're wondering, am I in that kind of catchment? What is there a kind of a rule of thumb or a anecdote that kind of says, if you're thinking this way, it might be for you?
Well, I think from my experience, when I really realised that I had a problem with food, was when I wanted to stop doing what I was doing with food. I wanted to stop binging, but I found that I couldn't. And, some mornings I'd wake up and I'd be like, okay, today's going to be different. I'm going to plan my meals for the day, or I'm just going to have, one meal or whatever. And I'd find that at the time I was in the kitchen, I was binging again. So for me, that was a good rule of thumb, that if I couldn't stop doing what I was doing, even though I really wanted to. And especially, if it was causing me a lot of misery in my life as well, and I found that it kind of affecting my life. I was isolating from friends and family. It was affecting my work. I was binging at my desk, and yeah, just wanting to be on my own with the food. And it's quite miserable existence, really. So I don't know if that might help somebody realize that they have a problem. But yeah, when I couldn't stop and I wanted to do it, that was the main thing for me.
That makes perfect sense. Where can people get in touch with Addictive Eaters Anonymous in the Dublin area?
So Addictive Eaters Anonymous, our website is www.aeairl.org. Our email address is contact@aeairl.org. And our phone number is 01-55-49-725. We meet on a Monday night in Chalkwira on Gardner Street at 7:30. And anyone who has any interest in addiction to food, be it for themselves or a family member or a colleague, is more than welcome to attend. And the address and the details of that meeting are on our website, which again is www.aeairl.org.
And you can rock up to that meeting, or you could just maybe drop an email or a phone call in advance if you wanted to.
Yeah, they could get in touch, phone or email as well.
Brilliant. Ladies, it's been interesting to learn about it, and thanks for coming on the radio today.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Thanks for having us. Thank you.
To contact the programme, email mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie.
My thanks to the members of Addictive Eaters Anonymous for today's interview. Absolutely fascinating. They have asked me to share with you their preamble that they have before each meeting. So here it is.
Addictive Eaters Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from food addiction. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop addictive eating. There are no dues or fees for membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AEA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organisation or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to recover from food addiction and help others to achieve recovery.
Mental Wealth on 103.2 Dublin City FM with myself, Brian Green. Thanks for tuning in today. If you have any details for the programme, we always love to get emails. And the email address to use is mentalwealth@dublincityfm.ie. We're back next Tuesday at 12:30. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
There is no health without mental health. There is no wealth without mental wealth.